Okay, I think it's time to start with this session. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for coming to this session 21 of the European Conference on Quality in Statistics. My name is Agustín Cañada. I'm the quality manager of the National Statistical Institute of the INE. And we have in this session four very interesting papers. The session is called Quality Indicators, and then this gives the possibility of different topics. Two of the presentation are close link is about the Eurogroup register, this very relevant project in Europe. Another one is for purchasing power parities, and we have another for indicators of sustainability, which is also a challenging topic. Okay, let's go into a start by our first speakers, and at the end, as you know, we will have a time for questions and suggestions of all of you. Okay, our first speaker is Solt Wolfinger. He works in Eurostat as coordinator of the Eurogroup register process. He's working since 10 years on this project, starting from scratch, building up a database from 5,000 groups to a system where now we have 110,000 multinational groups with close to 1 million companies. In this process, the national data of the European Union and EFTA business registers are combined into one central register with consolidated data on the groups. This basic infrastructure, as you know, can be used for all the NSIs participating in this relevant project. The title of the presentation is Quality Indicators of the Eurogroup's Register.
Okay, so thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. So I will report you on the Eurogroup's register and on the quality indicators related to this process. So the Eurogroup's register, or as we call EGR, is a statistical business register. And this register is managed by Eurostat and by the national statistical institutes of the EU and the EFTA countries. So we have contributing countries from all EU countries, plus also the four EFTA countries are contributing to this project. In the EGR, we cover the population of multinational groups, and we cover all groups, European ones, non-European ones, which are active in Europe, so which have one company at least in one of the EU or EFTA countries. We do yearly cycles. We produce data, annual data, on the structure of the multinational groups, and these data are produced year by year. And to create the EGR, what we do, we collect microdata. We collect input information on group members, on the relationships of the members, on the relationships of the companies of the groups, from the national offices, from the national business registers, and we also buy data to improve this data from commercial data sources. So as I mentioned, we collect microdata. We use this microdata as input. We collect the microdata on the legal units. The legal units means the companies of the groups, relationships, which means subsidiary parent relationships within the groups, and on the enterprise is the statistical picture on the company. So normally it's one-to-one to the company. In some cases, countries can combine different companies into one enterprise. So you can imagine we have 32 different NSI sources. We have also one commercial source for the moment. So we collect a lot of information, partly complementary, partly also conflicting information. These information are treated in the system, in the process with the predefined rules. We have priority rules on the data. We have different business rules which are implemented in the process. And having all the input data collected, we transform them. We have final legal units defined in the system. We have final relationships defined in the system for each reference year. And then we calculate the group structures. So this EGR process is a long-running process. We run it since almost 10 years. We had before EGR 1.0 as a starting version of EGR until 2015. EGR 1.0 was mostly focusing on the large groups. We had a coverage like 5,000 groups, just the largest groups in Europe. But we had a redesign of the system between 2012 and 2015. And now we have a system which is running, already have three complete cycles completed for references 14, 15, and 16. And this is called EGR 2.0. Just some numbers on the coverage of this database for EGR 2016 frame, which was completed in the beginning of this year. So we need about 15 months to complete the full picture on the groups and combining the different sources. So for 2016 data, we have more than 111,000 groups in EGR, covering almost 800,000 enterprises, companies. The system is increasing since the redesign. First we had 61,000 for reference year 2014, then for the reference year 15, 80,000. Now we have 111,000. I think it's still increasing. So we really need, due to the big volume of data, some numbers where we can check and control the quality of these data input, throughput, and the output. So EGR is a basic infrastructure. EGR is a statistical register. So Eurostat, when the production phase is finished, distributes the data of the EGR to the national statistical authorities. They can use this harmonized picture on the groups when they produce national statistics. So it's kind of a basic infrastructure which can be used by all contributors. And with the help of EGR, the national data, like foreign affiliate statistics, FDI statistics, SME statistics, can be much better harmonized because they have the same picture on the groups. I think this is the first attempt in the European statistical system to exchange large volume of microdata. So really exchange year by year 100,000 of records to combine them to a final picture and to distribute them back to the countries. So as I mentioned before, we treat every year a big volume of data. So we have these data from multiple sources. And in order to facilitate the data processing, we define quality indicators for the process. So we define three types of indicators: input, throughput, and output. The input indicators measuring the input data completeness and consistency of the national input files. The throughput indicators, or they also can be called process indicators, measuring the changes of the source data during the EGR process. And the output indicators are measuring the completeness of the output, what we disseminate to our users. I will report on all these three types of indicators, and also I will report on one composite indicators on the EGR quality, mostly for project management purposes. So let's start with the input indicators. I hope it's visible also, some examples I have on the slide. So with the input indicators, we measure the completeness and the consistency of the national input files. We measure the number of LIGA units, number of relationships, number of enterprises received from the NSIs by country for each reference year. This can be also compared to the previous reference year, and we can see the trends between two reference years. And we also measure the completeness of some of these files. The most critical variables like employment, turnover, main activity, so these are the variables of the business registers, how these are filled in the national files. So if you check those two tables here, those are representing our indicators. We do it by country to each reference year. The top table shows number of relationships for this reference year, for the previous reference year. There is a comparison. We can see if some countries deliver significantly less records this year than they did last year. Or we can compare also the cross-border relationships in the table. So we also collect domestic relationships between two group members in the same country, and we also collect cross-border relationships, which is most important for the multinational groups. So we also make a calculation on the cross-border relationships. And the bottom table, you can see these are the enterprise data, what we collect country by country. I removed the countries from the table, but you can see that how the activity code, how the employment, how the turnover, the last three columns are filled by country for the enterprises we got, and you can also see number of enterprises in the reference year and the previous year and also the comparison. So these indicators help Eurostat, help our colleagues working on EGR production to process the data and to see the input quality. what we do, as I mentioned, we monitor these indicators. If the number of received records significantly decrease between two reference years, then we go back to the NSIS and report. If we have some key indicators, key variables missing from the input files, like we miss the turnover, miss the employment of the enterprises, we also go back to the NSIS and report. We started these indicators to follow up the process in this EGR cycle. And for example, just the main activity code, which was filled for 91% of the EU enterprises in the 15th frame, it's now filled for 99%. So Eurostat goes back to the NSIS and asking them, please deliver a new file. We missed turnover, we missed the employment. This input data should be improved. So what is not yet done, we don't have thresholds. We don't have thresholds for these data. So what should be done in the future and what we will do with the NSIS in the coming period, we will define minimum criteria for acceptance of the input tables. And we will say that below this minimum level, the data files will be as insufficient quality and should be replaced with a new file. So this is still to be done, but this is the next step we have to define to have a sufficient input quality. Another group of indicators, what we have, those are the throughput indicators. So not only the input data, but also the data in the processing are monitored. We monitor the process of the legal units, relationships, and the enterprises. We have different areas in the production, source area where we keep the input data, transformation area where we consolidate the different versions of the same entities, and we have the consolidation area, which is the end picture of one entity. We compare the records not only between these steps, but also compared to the previous reference year. And also, for example, the number of enterprise groups is monitored here, because number of enterprise groups is also a proxy to show the quality. We have a continuity, we have an identifier for the enterprise groups, so number of enterprise groups with continuity between 2 years is also a thing what we monitor in the throughput indicators. Just some examples on these throughput indicators what we have. This we also monitor country by country. So the top indicator is referring to relationships in the process. You can see for the reference here by each specific NSI, we have this and these numbers in the import area. So import is the third column. Then in the transformation area, and then in the consolidation area, these are the resident relationships. And you can see we lose a few relationships in the process. So between the import and the consolidation, which is the output, we lose some records. Normally, we should not lose resident relationships, because if a country is delivering 2 records, my subsidiary, my parent in the same country, those should survive the process, but some we lose. And if we detect some problems, we go back to the countries and ask, or we check the system, do we have some bugs inside or not? It's a quite new system, so that some bugs are always detected. But there could be some reasons to lose some relationships. For example, if one of the parents or subsidiary is a liquidated entity, then the relationship will be not processed, because the relationship will also be liquidated. Or another example, that the country is delivering redundant information for the same subsidiary, they deliver 2 controlling parents in 2 relationships, only one of them will be taken by the business rules, another one will be not processed. So this also shows how the information within the processing survives the different steps. The second table is showing a comparison on the groups, comparing numbers of the groups by year and year minus one, and the difference. Now we have more increase, because the system is still loading more and more data year by year, and we also can see the overlap of the groups, which is around 70, 80, 65% from year to another year. What we still miss for the throughput indicators to have thresholds, so this, as I mentioned before, will be the task of the coming period to define minimum criteria for acceptance of process results in EGR, and this will be done together with the NSIS in the coming period. Another group of indicators, what we defined is the output indicators. So we have output indicators per country, and these indicators measure the completeness of the EGR final frame, the end product, on the legal units, on the enterprises, and on the enterprise groups. So these data we disseminate to our users after closing the EGR yearly cycles. We have a metadata report and a quality report, and these are part of the quality report. This table is showing, for example, how complete the data of the EU enterprises by country are in the EGR.
like ID number, name we have for all, for sure. This is a compulsory variable. Address for almost all 100%. NAIS code, employment, turnover, the last three digits. Completeness varies depending on the country. So what is still missing? Based on the previous steps to see if all the new thresholds will work, how the final output will look like. The final output really much depending on the input and throughput results. So over here we will not define thresholds, but the thresholds of the two previous groups will define also the quality of these numbers. I mentioned that we have like 110,000 groups in the EGR and the system is still growing and growing. After we complete each EGR cycle, we deliver back the information to the NSIs and they can compare the data on a micro level to their national populations because we have official statistics on the foreign subsidiaries and this is called foreign affiliate statistics. This is published by all European countries. So what we do, we define four indicators on the completeness of the EGR output based on micro level comparisons of national populations of EGR and foreign affiliate statistics. Identification is not an issue because we have in EGR all records identified, also in national populations all records are identified. So we have defined four variables to make quality indicators on micro level, and these define the completeness of the EGR for one specific country. Completeness of the EGR on employment, this is counting the employment of the same units in the same populations. We also define the accuracy of the UCI, so the UCI is the ultimate controlling unit, the group head, what is also registered in EGR. And also we define the completeness of the resident groups in EGR, so this is an outward FETS perspective, how many groups we have in the system which are present in the outward FETS. So inward FETS is a statistics reporting on foreign controlled enterprises in my country. Outward FETS statistics is reporting on my enterprise groups having subsidiaries outside of the country. So EGR covers both, and some subpopulations of EGR can be compared to this. So we have, based on the analysis done by the NSIs, some figures for the EGR 15 data. These were calculated in end of 2017. And the completeness of EGR 15, so with the 80,000 groups population, we came to the number 59%. On employment, this is higher. That means we cover the largest groups, what we could miss the smaller groups, 84%. The accuracy of the UCI, the group head country, is 82%. And on completeness of resident groups in EGR, which have subsidiaries outside the country, 45%. So we still see there is a room for improvement. I think EGR is quite complete, specifically for large groups, but there is still a lot of things to be improved and accuracy also to be improved. So we will calculate these indicators for the 2016 frame in the end of 2018. I'm expecting much better numbers. So as we see from the global numbers, I think these numbers will be better. And what is our task? Eurostat, NSIs, statisticians in the business register domain, in the FATS domain, We have to compare our populations, what is missing, how those data can be added to the EGR. Just one more final remark on our indicators. Mainly for the project management purposes, we defined also a composite indicator, which is an average of these four quantitative indicators, which is like 68%. It's the overall quality of EGR. Non-qualitative criteria like timeliness, accessibility are not included in this number. Those will be added to this number in writing. And this composite indicator will be also calculated for the next cycle and will show, I really hope, improvement in the quality. But this is mainly for project management purposes to show the quality, the overall quality of the register. So as conclusions, I can tell you that Eurostat and the participating NSIs are continuously working to improve the EGR. And with the support of these quality indicators, all the actors can measure in the system the quality of the contribution on the input, the quality of the interim results, and the quality of the end results of the process. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Salt, for this very interesting and very challenging topics of the Eurogroup Register. Our next speaker is Laurent Olislager. Laurent is working now in the Purchasing Power Parities team of Eurostat. He's graduated from the University of Brussels as an engineer. He has also degrees in mathematics and economics and management, and he completed a PhD in engineering and physics in Belgium and in France. He joined Eurostat in 2015, and is now in several fields as price statistics and quality. The topic of the presentation is assessing the uncertainties of statistical outputs. The case of purchasing power parity, which is a very, very relevant and from my personal point of view, challenging also because mixed micro or traditional statistical data with macro national accounts data.
Yeah, thank you for the introduction. Okay, there is only my name there, but of course it's a work that's supported by the whole PPP team, my head of unit Paul Conain and my team leader Marina Gasic in particular. So let's move to the content. First I will define what are purchasing power parities because I'm not sure everybody knows here. The abbreviation is PPPs, not to be confused with public-private partnerships. I think they stole our acronym after we defined it. And then I will focus actually here on the precision and accuracy on these PPPs with two main parts, how we can assess the relative impacts on the input data that I use to calculate these PPPs and how we can try to characterize the output data in terms of precision and accuracy. So let's move directly to the definition of PPPs. Well, here's the situation. We consider Alice and Bob, who both earn 1,500 euros, and the question is how many hamburgers can they buy? That's the typical example that is taken. And of course, this depends on the burger's price, okay? And that's basically what PPPs are. PPPs are just indicators of price level differences, and they are used to compare the purchasing power of people in different countries, but of course, not only for burgers. We calculate these PPPs for a wide range of goods and services, trying to cover the whole GDP. And to do so we actually collect prices really for burgers and all other goods and services possible, and then we aggregate these price comparisons up to the GDP level, then to compare the price level of the whole economy, because of course it will depend on the different goods and services. And when we do that, we can use these PPPs for different purposes. Indeed, we start with this micro data to then do macroeconomic analysis. In particular, we can compare the price levels in the different countries, and then it can be used, for example, to measure poverty, because depending on the price level in the different countries, you could be up or below the poverty line. And one of the main purposes is to do what we call real GDP comparisons, meaning comparisons of volumes and not only of in currency terms. Because of course, if all the prices in one country are two times the prices in another country, the GDP will be artificially two times higher. And so this is a very relevant question now, in particular because there are a lot of comparisons of GDPs between different countries. For example, there is a question whether the GDP per capita is now higher in Italy or Spain, because it's just at the limit. And to do these comparisons, we need these PPPs to be accurate, of course. So how are we calculating these PPPs? Well, it's a central collection. It's organized by the OECD and Eurostat, because you cannot define a PPP only for one country, because by definition, we want to compare the price levels between different countries or regions. So you need to have a central collection and to compare between all these countries. So to do so, Eurostat with OECD is leading the collection, the price collection at the microdata level. And basically, we need to compare what is comparable. So we have a list of well-defined products, and all the countries are supposed to collect prices for these products. So you see that here, for example, we collect prices for different types of rice. Okay, and we do that, of course, for a wide range of goods and services. So all countries, A, B, C, and so on, will collect prices, and then we'll derive an average price for each country. And to derive the PPPs, we'll just compare all the bilateral price ratios between all countries, and basically average them. I will not go into detail here. It's based on Pasher and Lapierre indices for those who know who are familiar with this. And then we derive these PPPs, but what is important here is that these PPPs are basically some average of all the bilateral price ratios between the different countries. So we do that at a very basic level, what we call basic headings actually. And then of course we are interested to aggregate this up to the whole economy. And this is done again, we repeat the procedure. Instead of starting with prices and averaging them to obtain PPPs, we start with the PPPs at the basic level and we average them to obtain aggregated PPPs up to the GDP level. And we obtain our set of PPPs. So I had animations, but they disappear, so I'm sorry. You don't have the surprise to see everything appearing one by one. So our results, they look like the table up there. We have basically a set of numbers for the different countries. Here is, for example, the price level for a given category in country A, B, C, and so on. And what is important to know is, of course, it's a multilateral index, so everything is averaged so that basically the geometric mean for all countries is 100. So what it tells us is that in country A, the price level is 1% above the average for all countries. Well, our question is, of course, is it, because here I will focus on precision and accuracy, can we make a statement in a press release that the price level of country A is 1% above the average? Well, the answer is we don't know. What we communicate for the moment is that it is not possible to calculate precise error margins for PPPs or for the real expenditure level, so these comparisons in volume of the economies, or the price levels derived from them. And we state that experience suggests that differences between countries of over 2 percentage points are generally statistically significant. That's at GDP level, of course. The lower we go in the levels, the less accurate it will be. So basically what we say is we have no clue whether we can make statistically significant statements in some cases, for example, between country A and B. We are confident that we can say that the price level in country D is bigger than in country E, for example, in this case, but not between C and E and so on. So the point here is to try to do better than this, and for two main purposes. We have a clear situation here. We have input data and output data. And it's true that we cannot derive precise error margins because we don't have a random sample, because we have to actually select a range of items that where we will collect prices. Then when this list of items is defined, countries will have to select where to collect prices and so on. So it's true that it's not a random sample at all, and there is no way we can define statistically well-defined error margins. But the point is to try to do better than say we have no clue. Because we have a clear situation, we have some input data, which are these surveyed prices. Then when we aggregate, we actually ensure consistency with national accounts by using expenditure weights from national accounts. So that's part of the input data that helps us build up the PPPs up to the GDP level. And then we have a set of assumptions, like, okay, whether we collect prices for this item or another item, whether we consider that when we have lack of data, how we will make an imputation and so on. Then we have this, what appears to the users as a black box, this PPP calculation, what I describe is called the EKS method. And then we have our set of output data. For the outside, it's this list of PPPs that we provide without any indicator of precision and accuracy apart from the sentences I showed. And we have derived indicators. And then for the producer point of view, we have some quality assessment, which is mainly based on variation coefficients. So basically, analyzing the output data only and checking whether it seems plausible and what are the discrepancies between the different countries. Well, our purpose here is that we have to do better than this. We have to characterize better the input data to allow better enhanced communication to the users. And on the producer point of view, we have to assess the relative impacts of the input data. What is the main source of uncertainty in the results? And to do so, well, we have very, very simple methods to try to assess this. So a first possibility is just to actually challenge the assumptions on the inclusion of items or other items. So to see the impact of an item, we can just exclude it from the calculation and see and compare the outputs, compare the results with the previous situation. And that gives precious information on the producer point of view first, because you can see different situations. So on the first table, you see that, for example, excluding category one consists of three items, and then excluding one of them has clearly huge impacts on the output data. So we can have an idea of the precision and accuracy and of the impact of these input data compared, for example, to category two, where basically it has no impact excluding one item. So we can actually use these kinds of statements to enhance the production process in the design first by checking whether it's relevant, by informing the trade-off between the cost of, for example, collecting prices for more items and the expected benefit to the results. So for example, here it would not make sense to collect more prices in category two, but it would make sense perhaps to check if we don't have consistency issues in category one, because clearly the prices, the marginal gain of information of the different items show that we don't have a good consistency in this category. Then we can check other assumptions like the representativity of items, because under some basic level, we actually don't have national accounts data that allow us to aggregate the PPPs. Okay. To aggregate the PPPs using weights, because we don't have weights. But in some cases, we actually do. We can use, for example, if we go to supermarkets, we can use scanner data, transaction data, to have in some specific situations the weights really at item level, and to compare a weighted calculation with the usually unweighted calculation that we use and assess what is the impact of this, again, to inform better the decisions we take on inclusion or not of items, and assignment of a representativity sign or not, because the countries have to assign a representativity sign to items that will carry a higher load in the calculation. And most importantly, I was a bit slow, sorry, I will focus also on fluctuation of prices. So basically, we can estimate what is the precision of the input data with, for example, these previous calculations. And given the precision of the input data, we can run a calculation to see what is then the precision on the output data. So what I did there, for example, is a Monte Carlo simulation. So basically estimating input on the input, putting a random fluctuation of prices of a given magnitude, and running a calculation with these prices randomly modified, typically a few hundreds time, and then averaging out. Of course, it will average the same result, but then we can see the standard deviation on the output data. And that gives an idea here, the standard deviation is not statistically well-defined as if it was a random sample, but it gives an idea of the precision of the output data. And I will check this. So that's what we need to communicate to the users, is instead of communicating just a set of prices and weights that are actually confidential and a set of PPPs well-defined, we can have these prices and weights, evaluate the uncertainty of these prices and weights, and check what is the precision of the output data. And so, according to preliminary calculations, I can confirm that these few percentage points is indeed a good statement, but of course, we need to communicate more precise numbers to this, but I cannot communicate them to you here because for the moment, our reflex is we don't know, so we don't give any information. And I think it requires as well a little mentality shift that if we think we have good enough estimations, we should communicate them with all, we have to take care of how we communicate them so that it's not misinterpreted by users, but we should communicate them because it would allow users to use data with more information, and we can also have feedback loops from the users about where actually they would like to have more precision, for example. So thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Laurent, for this interesting presentation that shows us that there are still some fields for quality improvement and analysis very, very very challenging. Our next speaker is Esteban Barbado. Barbado is the manager of the business register of the National Statistical Institute of Spain. He's working in business register and related matters since he entered the INE in 1989. During the last years, has been very involved in all this new process of derived from globalization as the Eurogroup registers project, the profiling, etc. He's one of the core of the economic statistics in all the INE. The title of the presentation is How Much Has National Information Changed in the Eurogroup Register? Some Quality Indicators in the Scope of the ESBR Project.
Okay, thank you, Agustin, for your introduction. Good morning, everybody. I would like to present our initiative, which is linked to the quality management in the scope of the ESBR's project. My presentation is closely related with the first one, the source presentation. In fact, we are working together in the same business, but also in a different and complementary scale. So I will make reference to some ideas already presented in order to better understand the main features of this project, the context where we move, and the diverse contribution to this important project. So let's go with the matter. The European System of Business Registers is a core initiative of the Vision 2020 portfolio. It aims to create a coordinated infrastructure of national and global frames, serving as the backbone for the production of high-quality business statistics. With this new system, it is expected also a more consistent approach to globalization events, particularly a consistent evaluation of the economic activities carried out by the multinationals in the European area. This is a quite complicated project, subject to a very complex governance, several bodies, managers, and TIC experts are involved, and we have several prerequisites for a successful development of this project. We need a good coordination in all actions designed. We need a proper definition of all exchange flows and data processes. And of course, we need stable and very qualified resources in all participating organizations, mainly NSIs and Eurostat. This system can be visualized as a network formed by all national business registers managed in the NSIs and the Eurogroup register centrally managed in Eurostat with the help of all member states. The Eurogroup register is placed in the core of the ESBR system. It contains information about the most influential multinationals operating in the European Union and EFTA countries. It is yearly updated through a very strict collaborative model based on interchanges of microdata. And since 2014, we have incorporated some innovations. For example, we have a unique system for the identification of all entities irrespective of their residence country. We have reinforced all technological environment of this system in order to allow us interact across countries and deal with the same global units in the different areas where they operate. And also we have adopted some business rules, the so-called authenticity principles, for the core phase of the EGR, the part where the consolidation of groups, the consolidation of the global perimeter of groups is achieved. All these elements integrate the so-called EGR 2.0 methodology. Of course, quality is a key requirement for the ESPR system. For all of us, it's quite clear that a well-defined quality policy will make business registers more intensely used in all statistical operations, decision-making, and planning. In this context, and since 2015, we already have a data quality program operative for national business registers and the EGR. This program is based in these four components: reporting, targets, assessment, and improvement. And our particular initiative focuses on targets and assessment components and makes a rational evaluation of the EGR model and its main elements: national files, data process, and derived outcomes. Here, we can see with more detail our strategy. Normally, the EGR is formulated as a production chain where all inputs, the national files sent to the EGR, the throughput, this is the consolidation phase, and the outputs, in other words, the final frames derived from the EGR, are currently monitored by a set of predefined quality indicators. This is exactly what Sol has presented before. Our initiative directly connects both sources and explores the changes produced in our national information throughout the whole cycle until its definitive registration in the EGR. And this analysis has been performed in two directions: national business register versus EGR and vice versa, and also separately for two populations, inward and outward FATS. FATS means foreign affiliate statistics. This is the, I think, the most important globalization operation. Normally, FAT is investigated throughout two target populations, inward and outward FATs. Inward refers to all resident entities which are controlled by a foreign unit. And outward FATs correspond to all foreign subsidiaries of Spanish multinational, more or less. They are mirror statistics. Well, in the following, I will examine some consistency indicators produced for two specific situations. In the first one, we have compared our national information versus the EGR final frame. In other words, the blue area versus the red area. And this is what we have. We have that more than 90% of units remain in the EGR with exactly the same profile. They represent also the 98% in terms of employment. If we consider this common population, we have that the 82.5% of units have exactly the same ultimate controlling country. We also have that 3% of our units have disappeared. This can be explained because their immediate pairing has been liquidated in the president's country. I'm very curious. Almost 2% of our inward FAT units now are registered in the EGR as belonging to outward FATs. We can say that for these cases, the chain of control comes back to Spain. In summary, for us, quite acceptable consistency rates, and all events, all changes detected, are consistent according to the business rules established for the consolidation phase of the EGR. Let's see now what happens when we consider OFATs as reference population, and the comparative study is performed in the opposite direction. EGR frame versus national information. In this case, we have that less than 50% of units remain with the same features. They represent the 85% in terms of employment. We have that almost 10% of units belongs to domestic groups according our national system. And also we have that almost a half of units are outside enterprise groups according our national system. In summary, our conclusion is that although the most representative units remain in the same profile in both sources, the discrepancies are much more meaningful. And this situation justified the development of a desk operation in order to analyze what is really happening in the core step of the EGR and also identify the reasons that could explain these changes in the traceability of the units. Well, here you can see an example of this desk operation. This is the case for which we have investigated. They correspond to all OFAT units in the EGR for which we don't have any evidence of belonging to any enterprise group. Here we have the results. I'm not going to provide details, but I just like to remark that in this collaborative model, third proactive countries sending a big amount of cross-border relationships to the EGR generates de facto false Spanish multinationals. This is our case. I think this kind of situation should be in the future more properly controlled or monitored in this critical step of the AGR. Well, I finish. This has been a very interesting experience for us, very illuminating. We already know better the real functioning of this collaborative model. We already know the possible collateral effects of this way of work. We recommend the replication of this type of studies in other member states in order to analyze what is really happening in the particular case. We think that having a wide range of indicators will help us to define more properly quality policies for the AGR. In our case, we know where we have to work more. And I like to finish saying that changes are not always bad news. We also have detected specific cases of changes where the AGR gives value added to the original information in terms of relevance and data accuracy. Well, that's all I wanted to say. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Esteban, for this very impressive presentation, with so much passion about the European needs of cooperation and the quality indicators in the case of globalization, because it's something that in which we have to work together. Thank you. Our last speaker is Bicou Mathieu. He's a statistician economist by training, in charge of quality assurance for the World Development Indicators, a flagship publication of the World Bank Group. He was a member of the World Bank Host Global Office, and he was a key contributor to data quality assessment in this area. He's author of several publications, international institutions as World Bank, European Union, etc. His broad range of experience includes agricultural statistics, macroeconomic, and regional statistics. He holds a Master in Statistics and Applied Economics, and a Master of Business Administration. The title of the presentation is Building Sustainable International Statistical Products, Policies, Technology, and Quality Returns from the World Development Indicators.
Thank you for the presentation, Mr. Chair, and good morning, everybody. Oh, good afternoon. No, it's still good morning. That's great. We are here together. What I'm trying to share with you today is the work of a group of staff of the World Bank Group composed of interdisciplinary accounts in many areas that I will show in a minute. Two of us are here. I have a data scientist with me who should be in the audience. His name is Tony. And the group has that produced this work has about 12 people. So I would like to acknowledge them, even though my name is on the slide here. What we are talking about today is how to build a sustainable international product. First of all, in this environment, you are more homogeneous in the sense that you pertain to the same region. Consider when you travel the world and see countries with different level of development and different level of infrastructure of production of statistics, some issues come to play, and those issues have to be taken into account when building these products. We will see that the World Development Indicator have been around for a while, which means somewhere it's a product that is accepted. So what we'll be discussing is policies, technologies that brought us to this level of quality and what we get out of it. A summary presentation of the statistics department, or let's say the data group that serves as statistics department for the World Bank, is a group of programs, including the Living Standard Measurement Survey, the Statistical Capacity Building Initiatives, mainly for underdeveloped countries, the International Comparison Program, which is the headquarters for the purchasing power parity that was presented earlier, and what we call the Data Council, which is the governance body of data activities in the bank. We also have some initiatives which lead us to how our data is assessed. One of them is the Open Data Initiative. The other one is the Micro Data Library, which is the register of all surveys conducted worldwide with partial or total financing from the World Bank Group and some other international agencies. One thing that we call the Data Bank, which is now being combined with the Micro Data Library to form the Data Catalog, internally known as the Development Data Hub, and some other country profile elements. The WDI resides as a product, among others, within the Open Data Initiative. What is the World Development Indicator? It's a collection of statistics about multiple subjects, including poverty and shared prosperity, which are the two twin goals of the World Bank: people, environment, economy, state and market, and global links. And each one of them is described. When you have a chance, you can see what we offer in each aspect. I will be concentrating mainly on these areas. When coming to this conference, what we try to do is to say where we fit in the international community assessing the quality of our data. So I tried to place our process and the data flow in a framework which already exists. This frame here belongs to the CBS Netherlands, so I borrowed it from them and I tried to fit into it. We collect our data from what we call data providers, which could be government, academics, wherever the data is available. And this data comes to us in different formats. You will or will not believe it, we still receive data in paper form nowadays. But we also receive some PDF documents, some Excel files, and at the PDF level, we are able to process them automatically, but we still key in some of them. So this will come to our office in this different format, and we need to bring them and digitalize them. Once this is done, we now bring them in a overall frame, but each specialist bringing the data in the form that they received it for the sector, digitalized in a uniform way. At this place, we first get everything that we can to an archive system to make sure that if anything happens in the process, we are able to come back to it and get the data and rerun the process. At this stage, the data is moved to a central place where we are making it available to the external world through mainly the API and other interfaces that are available for use for external users, which will have to identify themselves if needed. If not needed, they will just get the data when they come to our place through the different platforms that we have. Now, what is open data for us? Well, open data is a concept that is developed worldwide, and the definition that we retain is the one of the open definition that stipulates that open data and content can be freely used, modified, and shared by anyone for any purpose, including commercial purposes. In the past, we used to sell our data for access, but nowadays it's free and open for everyone. This enables free and open access to global development data, is based on the Creative Commons attributions and run on universal data access platform. It also allows unlimited access to content and is supported by a team of experts. What we have, and those who are older than me here will know the previous World Development Indicators, which used to come as a book, and it was originally even an annex to the World Development Report, which is produced by the World Bank. And this annex is a collection of statistics classified by theme, and some of them will be disaggregated to few countries. It started with a couple of indicators, covered a few years, but nowadays is a bigger infrastructure. With technology, we were able to put this data in digital platforms, such as some of us would know the flex, the floppy disks, the diskettes, and all those technologies. And later on, we moved to the CD-ROM technology with the ability to browse the data using visual interfaces. And in the year 200s, we moved to the web-enabled queries with ability to query our data online. And the paper production continued until 2016, where we stopped the World Development Indicators production on paper because it just became too big and too big to carry, and we moved to the digital platform. However, with the change in the demand worldwide, we are now producing the SDG Atlas. The last one is here. Very few of you will have a copy at the Statistics Poland stand outside there, but if you're not able to have it, you just try to contact us and then we will provide you whatever it is. I will provide the website in the next slide. So in summary, the technology we have receives data from any form that we have. The preferred one is SDMX, thanks to our cooperation with Eurostat and OECD to develop this platform. And now we are moving it to the countries. Few countries are already using it to provide data to us, which come to the WDI database, and then we make it available to the users through our user interface and API. Now, let's talk about what WDI is today. If you have the ability, you just type on your browser, on the cell phone, or on your computer, data.worldbank.org. You will see this screen here, which we think is more user-friendly than the paper one that we used to produce earlier. We also have the capacity now in this platform to produce our indicators in a multilingual fashion with all the properties listed above. What I'm showing here is what we get out of WDI. Some users are so happy with what we have that every time we update data, they will go and download everything that we have and make their own product out of it. This one comes from an organization called Our World in Data.org, and they use our data to produce this kind of elements. But also inside, we use new technologies, including R, Python, and others, to produce charts that are very useful for policymaking worldwide. The advantage that WDI brings to this data is aggregation, derivation, and re-dissemination of data that comes from multiple organizations, including others in this room. In this time of the soccer, I chose one product that I wanted to share with you is, well, where does Poland stand in the world? Well, how will we measure that? We can choose, for instance, the GDP to represent it. And if you're able to find your country in one of these cakes, you will know how you fit. Obviously, US and China seems to be a very large player in terms of GDP. And the GDP we receive here should be the one not deflated by purchasing power parity. So this feature may change depending on where you put it. And we're also able, through this kind of presentation, to show the data by region, where you will see where European countries stand. I think they're there in the middle, and other parts of the world, the way we look. This does not belong to us. It's produced by an organization located in South Africa called Business Live, and they play this kind of games every time we update. A final note to show here is that since WDI has started in the 70s and 80s, we are doing whatever we can to get more data of better quality. Now, what is quality for us? We only cover the old framework developed by the international community, mainly World Bank and the IMF, which is the DCAF first, second, and third version. Our aim coming here is to learn from you guys, and I think you are doing great, and take whatever we can collect from here and go back and try to use those quality aspects outside the process, the product, and the relationship we have with our customers to make this even better for your use. I would like to thank you, all these organizations that collaborate with us to make this public good available to the international community. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gu, for this interesting presentation from the perspective of an international organization trying to deal with so many sources of different kind of data. Then the floor is open for question and suggestion to our four speakers.
Clara Juncker from Eurostat. I have a question to the last speaker, because you presented how you get the data and what you make out of it. But what I was missing a bit in your data flow, maybe I really missed it, where is your quality check? Because I only saw data coming in, putting in digital format, and then going immediately to the users. While in the presentation you said quality returns, and also you stressed quality a couple of times, so where is your quality check?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, you can.
Thank you. Okay, thank you for the question. In fact, the first version of the presentation was to go deeper and present these features that we have, but then I was called upon like 2 months ago just to say, okay, this is a context where people are very key in the time, but using the question session allow us to do this. So first of all, we will say that the quality check on our data is mainly our responsibility to guarantee the quality of the product, but we relay it to the source in case there is anything to resolve. Now, we also have parts for which we are custodian, and I think this is for national accounts mainly. And how we do the quality check is mainly focusing first on the data and then on the product as a whole. And on the data, we survey each time series for each country. And we run through them processes that will help us to identify any major fluctuation from 1 year to the other. And for national accounts, we control whatever is there. What it means is that if we have a country which have from 1 year to the other a 20% change in GDP, well, we have to put a stop, go ahead and see whatever happened and correct it. But we know the frame where national account data varies. We also know that in some situation, in case of disaster, some fluctuation would be acceptable. Those one, we try to manage them with information that we have. So what we do for WDI is first, we run through and get for each indicator a sensitive level which is designed for that indicator, and then we run through it. I was not able to present it here, but it's a very long process that we manage. What we are doing for the future is to try to put this in a context where we can show to the management, here is the quality of what we have. And once they accept that, we will move to the users even to show them with whatever we can present, this is how our data look like in terms of quality, and here is how we are evolving. But thank you for the question. That was very important.
Thank you, Nico. Is there any other? Well, while I have some questions for our speaker here, I'd like to ask something to Salt about the Eurogroup register, because obviously it's a quite relevant project in terms of how to face the globalization. And as Sol has told us, and also the details by Esteban, is quite advanced, and I think they have fulfilled more or less the plan and the program. But I would like to know, maybe it's at the end of your presentation, and maybe I am, it's my curiosity, if you know that in this moment there are a acceptable level of use of the Eurogroup register, what are the difficulties, real difficulties to start in the countries specifically to integrate Eurogroup register in the production chain?
So what we know, is it okay? So what we know, the countries are using the Eurogroup register in national production. This is for the moment not the primary source, but one of the sources what they use. So they collect data in national premises, but they also use the EGR. If there are differences, they compare. So what ESPRS project, this European System of Business Registers, targets, that once, in a few years, EGR should be the backbone, the primary source of this type of statistics on globalization, like foreign affiliates or trade by enterprise characteristics. So in a few years, I think it should be a system which is supporting the national institutions and should be the primary source for cross-border information. We are not yet there, for sure. We see from the numbers, but I think year by year we are closer to this point. In a few years, I think we can be there.
Thank you. Esteban, maybe you can make something about the level of use.
Well, I can add something. Yes, in relation to Spain, the EGR is used in fact statistics, but in different degrees regarding inward facts and outward facts. So I think in the near future we should move to a methodology, a consistent methodology about a common and coordinated use of the EGR as survey frame for all FAT statistics. This, for me, is a prerequisite to achieve more quality in the business statistics. It's not sufficient to have a unique frame. We need to go further and implement and incorporate in a coordinated way this unique frame in all production chains of globalization statistics in all member states. This is the biggest step to be done. And in this scenario, of course, subject matter units producer have the responsibility to assume this challenge, I think. We are working in our stabilization of the cycle of production. We are working, we are going to work in a better data quality program for the EGR and the National Business Registers. But in my opinion, and I hope this will happen, the producers should give this, should undertake this critical step for the improvement, the real improvement of the business statistics.
Okay, thank you. Is there any? Yes.
Thank you very much for our presenters. We benefited a lot from their insights and their value added. I have just a question to our colleague from World Bank, not on quality issues raised by Claudia in her question, but according to the definition of open data, it's something which are dealing with, and we are just preparing the terms of use of our website as we launched our database online recently. And The reuse of data, yes, it is a common feature of open data, but I am wondering if there is a common definition of the someone who gets data from the website can sell them. I mean, are the different entities which is responsible for open data worldwide are agreed on a common definition on this specific issue or not? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for this practical question. First of all, the open data concept is not this new. We at the bank, we came to the open data business in the year 2000-2010, and it's only in 2010 that our president has decided that that's it. We don't sell data anymore. We must make our data available to the community, and whatever they do with it is not our business. But it is our business, because when they use our data, we get the feedback that the data has been useful, good in terms of quality or whatever, and we get it back. So what we don't get is the money that comes out of the data. Now, the important question that you're asking is, how about if I produce the data freely and someone gets it and sells it? Well, at the national level, there are some data that has to be protected. For instance, every data that has to do with individuals, usually the common laws say that those data don't have to be even displayed or shown. Some data are so expensive that to get them, national statistical offices have to sell them. But some data are public data and have to be available because of democracy and all others. So what I would say to try to answer your question is that there is no common definition, whether it is for any institution, any country. But what we do in our case is to get the definition that would fit the vision and the goal of the organization, which is making data available for free. However, some organizations give data to us only to be available to those we know that we can report back to them. This data is also made available on the open data system, but with a caveat, is that you know that the data is there, but you cannot access it unless you register. And once you register, some will even ask us to do a verification that you are an actual person, an actual researcher. We do that. But till today and for the future, we will not sell data anymore, and our data can be used for commercial purposes. There is no issue. That is our definition of open data. But you can adopt it in your own case to fit your purpose. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you. My name is Carsten Sangenberg from Statistics Denmark. I would like to thank you for very inspiring speeches. And I would like to hear the two speeches from the European Statistical Business Register system. Do you have any cooperation with the national banks or the system of European national banks in this issue? Because what I'm thinking is that there's a similar work going on in some of these systems. Thank you.
Yeah, so we have a cooperation with national banks. National banks producing statistics are users of EGR. We deliver them the data, so not only to NSIs, but also to NCBs. We are authorized to deliver the data. We also have cooperation with the relevant body of the ECB on globalization issues. So we are very much linked because we know they also produce relevant statistics, needing kind of a backbone also for those statistical products.
There is, I have a question also for Laurent about the power parities, because you have told about the quality indicators and the process you are start. Obviously, it's a very challenging aspect because it's a mix of data, microdata, and all the question of national accounts. I don't know if you in the future, taking into account the progress that has been in the national accounts field about quality, maybe in the future you could think, I don't know if you have a thought in this possibility, to have this kind of quality chain link systems, mix the quality of the indicators at the micro level and these new structures, frameworks for the quality in national accounts.
You mean to get the data from national accounts or to get more the framework from national accounts?
Oh,
because actually here in these estimations, indeed the accuracy of national accounts has to be taken into account because we use these data. And we have made simulations on the basis of reliability of national accounts. But then, yeah, we would need a sustainable link with our colleagues from national accounts to have this flow of data between us to be able to use it in a continuous way.
Okay, any more? Well, if that's the case, we are going to close this session. Thank you very much, all of you. Thank you, our speaker, for this interesting, because it's the last opportunity for me. I'd like to thanks to the organizer of this very splendid conference, the nice dinner yesterday, and all the facilities. The organization has been incredible, also for all the people here at the rooms. And thank you, and we will come back, I hope, in the next future to Krakow. Thank you very much.